The other thing we asked about was emotional attachment to that particular patient. We saw a lot of the docs were anywhere either very attached or somewhat attached.
I think it's the bond and how you build this relationship. And I also kind of find that the caregivers, like you are the person who they look to guide them through this process because you have been there before. You had other patients who died, and they're looking at you. They've never done this before. So, I find that you ask a question about have you gone to a funeral? And sometimes I've gone a few times, but I have gone because I'm more bond, have a bond with the caretaker, and I want to be there for them. Because it is really that satisfying that it's not only the patient that you helped, but also that the family that you helped through this time.
And that's another thing that we asked too, Maria, in this survey was what's the person's circle of loved ones? And one of the things we've been thinking a lot about the last few years are dependent children, either the children of the patient or the grandchildren. A lot of times, the grandchildren are very, very close, maybe even being primary caretakers. And you kind of just wonder whether or not they get the attention that's necessary, whether there's a lot of trauma that people are experiencing. And I even wonder, our group's been interested in trying to see if we could develop education platforms or things that specifically address this. Anything that you've observed in caregivers, particularly minor kids?
Well, that first encounter with the patient, I think, is one of the most important ones. That's when you see the support of the family, who's coming with him or with her to the clinic, and the attitude that the family has, disbelief, denial, anger. And you have to, that first encounter is critical. The bond that you develop with the patient and the caregiver, as you said it's really important to guide that process. You sort of look at them and you foresee what the process is going to be because it's a decline and it's a dependency from chemotherapy treatment to treatment to come to the clinic. I think it makes it easier and you have a more gratifying experience if you have bonded with the family and they go from that denial and that anger to accepting their disease and accepting that there'll be a decline and there'll be a demise.
One of the things, again, we kind of pick your brain about, like, not just today, but we want to enlist you as working with us in the future to try to help us figure out, what we can do. And one of the things that I think we're bringing to the table that not too many bring, that maybe not that much focus on, is general oncology. The way the field is organized, it's very much in tumor fields. And yet, the way it's being practiced is very different. I guess before we get into the cases, one other thing I was just going to ask is the man who wrote the book, what was his name?
Paul Kalanithi.
And how long ago did you treat him? What was his clinical story? I guess he's gone public with the whole thing, obviously, right?
Right. So he died about a year and a half ago. So he was diagnosed about 3 years ago with EGFR mutation positive non-small cell lung cancer. And he was in his neurosurgical training, actually finishing up his last year.
How old was he?
He was early 30s and presented with back pain and started losing weight and eventually was diagnosed. And I learned about this from my colleague who's a neurosurgeon who I work with all the time, who was just, completely stricken with this news. And so I went to meet him in the hospital right as his first diagnosis was made and then continued to care for him over the year and a half that he had his cancer before it took his life.